Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Did you watch the Grammys at all last night?
A little bit. I was watching something else. I recorded it. I went back and I tried to catch up. You know, I saw Diana Ross in that big red dress.
That was pretty cool, actually.
It was fabulous. The introduction by her grandson was the cutest thing of the night.
That was pretty cool. You know, I didn't watch much of it. I saw some of the performances. I was unwisely watching this show that I should have quit probably years ago, The Walking Dead, which was back last night. I torture myself with this show because I've been with it from the beginning.
Never seen it.
And it keeps getting, well, it was really good for several years.
Yeah.
It was really, really good.
Yeah. And did it jump the shark? Is it one of those?
Many times over. And every episode that I watch now, it jumps the shark, including last night with the opening. There's this character played by Jeffrey Dean Anderson, who I think was on Grey's Anatomy, wasn't he, for a long time? You know what I'm talking about here? Anyway, he plays this character, Negan, and just gets out of control. Anyway, because of that, and because of putting my daughter to bed and everything like that, I didn't really pay attention to the Grammys. But I mentioned this week, last week, Carol, you know me, I'm a big music person. I go to a lot of live music. I listen to a lot of live music, and I tend to think I run the spectrum. I don't know half the people who are nominated anymore for the Grammys. I feel so out of it.
I felt like I was like 75-year-old woman peeking in my grandchildren's room at what they're looking over the shoulders. They watch television.
But you don't have grandchildren yet unless I have
I do
been
not.
Informed,
no, I but, don't, but I just felt like a grandma.
Right, but do you think that that's what, I guess that's what people are listening to? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well, I'd be curious to look at sales, downloads, now
how it matches up with
how it matches up with with what we were listening to. Are the same number of people listening to music now as when we were?
I think more people are listening to music because there's more access to music,
and so that would tell us that we're listening to what we want to listen to. We're not listening to everything. When my son gets in my car, anybody who's got Bluetooth, most people do in their car, right, gets into my car, takes over my Bluetooth, and he becomes the DJ. And he has introduced me to music all the time.
And you don't know what it is.
And
right?
I don't know what it is. So that was me last night.
My kids do that to me too, but there's some commonality. But what I'm finding with a lot of the acts nominated for Grammy, even some of the rock acts, which I don't think anyone buys records anymore, but I have a music service that I use, Tidal, and I put a lot of albums into my queue.
Right.
And there are a lot of really good rock albums that come out year after year after year, obviously, and this is certainly the case with pop and R&B and everything else, too, that never would get nominated for an award. So I know how, and I've told you how manipulative the movie awards are when it comes
is
to politics and campaigning.
I honestly
don't know, but it has to be, there has to be campaigning involved, because otherwise, how can you get all the attention focused on certain things? Now, again, I think it's like the Oscars, where when the Academy votes, directors vote for directors, producers for producers, the creative folks vote for the creative folks,
right,
and then everyone votes for Best Picture. That's for the nominations. Everyone votes once the nominations are out when you cast your final
right.
votes. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
So for this, I think you have members of the Academy in certain areas, the Recording Academy, who vote for this particular award and that particular award. And then once the nominees are out there, they all vote on everything. And let me just say, stating the obvious that people probably are not aware of, or at least the dirty little secret, there's no way for anyone who's voting to watch all of the nominees or to listen. You're supposed to do due diligence, but can you possibly watch all the nominees or listen to all the nominees?
I
it's
think
not physically possible,
your
usually.
Your Friday guest, Paul Hall, always of Common Guy, he says that he has told me before that he can spend days. He's never going to watch everything, but he does try to spend days just doing nothing but watching.
I've done that too.
And you've done that too.
Sure.
Now, and maybe our better question about music is not how much is selling, but how many more new artists are there now? Because just like with Hulu and Netflix, you have all these new, as you mentioned, access points. So you have more artists producing more music. You can do your own music and upload it on YouTube, period. And people have been, many have been discovered on YouTube. So I wonder if there are just more artists now.
I think so.
And so there's no way I even want to know. This is why I don't watch The Walking Dead, because Patrick and I make a conscientious decision. How many shows can we mentally handle? So you could be watching something every night, and we just have decided we're not.
You can't catch it up.
You can't do that. We're just not going to do that. I binged on Grace and Frankie on Netflix last night. That's what I was doing while the Grammys were on.
I call that show, my wife watches it, and I...
What do you call it?
I have another name for it.
Can we say it on the air?
Yeah, you could, because I just... My mom has watched that show, and that's the one with Lily Tomlin
and Jane Fonda.
And they find out, like, both husbands are gay. They came out at the same time.
Husbands who were in a law firm and had an affair with each other.
I call it Frankie and Johnny or something like that. I don't even know why I call it that. I'm like, hey, are you watching Frankie and Johnny?
I'm just saying, I've made a decision that... And see, you can binge on Netflix, so I don't have to watch it every week, right? Mm-hmm. I can just catch up. And so that I've made that decision with music. I am not going to listen to every... It's just impossible. So I was watching it last night, Mark, and I was like, I don't know. I'm zooming through.
Yeah, I just wanted to see the performances, but half the performances were from people that I'm either unaware of or I don't like, or I think I don't like. Like the Kendrick Lamar thing. I don't get him. I don't understand. Again, I said this last week. I tend to favor music. This is crazy. I know it's kind of out there on the fringe. I tend to favor songs that have a melody. I don't know. Just a little thing that I tend to enjoy, a melody for a song.
See, and I do like lyrics when I can hear them and understand them.
Which is difficult these days.
I do like lyrics. I do like meaning. I do like message music.
Sure.
And Kendrick Lamar has done that. But I also do like melody, and I like love songs. I like melody. I love ballads. So where am I in the mix? There's not a whole lot out there for me at all.
I don't think there's a whole lot for you at all.
Because I'm not, you know, the booty shaking.
Right.
You know, I was definitely
not. Do they have I'm looking at some of the categories here. They have
category for grandma?
They have best dance recording, best reggae album, best comedy album, best Latin pop. Do they have, best folk album. That was actually a good winner. Punch Brothers, All Ashore. Punch Brothers, really good. I saw them. It's kind of a bluegrass band that played at the Two Hill this last year. American Roots song. They don't really have best.
See, when I think of bluegrass,
best touchy feely.
They don't
adult
have that.
Contemporary.
I'm telling you.
I thought they had best.
This
adult
is what
contemporary.
They need. These are the new categories. Is at least one new category. Best song to cry by. Best song. Best song to cry by. Because how many have raised your hand, keeping one hand on the steering wheel? Sometimes you just want to cry.
What would that be from 2018? Do you have one in mind?
No.
You have to think about it.
I can't
think
about it. You know, I can't play Name That Tune. I don't know. People can call me and tell me, text me, tweet me. Not text me, but tweet me and tell me what's a good song to cry by.
I will say is that, you know, the Gaga performance and just that song from Star Is Born, Shallow, is pretty good too. You saw Star Is Born? You did see that, right?
No, haven't. That's on my list.
But it did pretty well last night. Best pop duo group performance, Shallow by Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper. So I'm guessing Bradley Cooper, who I think a lot of people thought he was going to get an Academy Award or a Golden Globe or a Critics' Choice Award, he's been shut out so far. But maybe this will be sort of something that he can take away from it because he won a Grammy. And how many people could say they won a Grammy anyway? So
there you go. Who are actors, right? Okay, yeah, I'm tweeting the question, best song of 2018 to cry to.
And see what the response is?
Yeah.
I don't know if I have an answer there for you.
I don't have my own answer.
I like good ballads. And by the way, rock artists and country artists, and I guess hip, I don't know. Do hip-hop artists have ballads to a certain extent? R&B singers
do. There are certainly some hip-hop artists who have protest songs, message music. But I don't know about ballads necessarily. I mean, ballad is an old genre, I suppose.
It is.
It's still current, but it's not something that the new kids are doing.
Nope, they don't. You're not going to hear a ballad on the radio anymore, really. Not on a hit station.
Okay, I've just tweeted. I want the best song to
cry. All
right,
let me know how that turns out.
I shall.
Thank you. Carol's back at 3:30 here with the news. I have Andy Puzder coming up here. He's the former CEO of CKE Restaurants, which is Hardee's and Carl's Jr. He was a nominee to be Commerce Secretary, and there was a hit job on him by the Democrats and by the media, so he didn't make it in that particular position. But he wrote a book called The Trump Boom and the Left's Plot to Stop It. Wrote a great piece over the weekend about this economy and how you barely hear about all the good things that are happening unless you pay attention to a show like this. Chris Kerber joining me later on to talk about the Blues Hot Streak. lot of times I don't tell you what my audio cut of the day is going to be. We're going to telegraph it here this afternoon. Bob Costas for ESPN Outside the Lines talking about why he basically was sent packing by NBC. Some comments that he made about CTE when he was on the NFL coverage. So a little bit more revealing than perhaps that story has been told in the last few weeks ever since moving on. So that's interesting. And we'll have that for audio cut of the day. Chris Kerber coming up to talk about the Blues hot streak at 3:35. I think we have our first Chris Raby report from Florida this afternoon. He was on an airplane down to Jupiter over the weekend. Pitchers and catchers officially reporting tomorrow. Many of those players already down at the spring training facility in Jupiter, and we're off and running here on spring training with the first game just a couple of weeks away. We have an audio cut of the day, as I mentioned, before the end of the hour, right into Total Information PM. Oh, and the other thing that sports related, because I'm really unsure what the American Alliance or the Alliance for American Football really is. Bill Goodykoons from the Arizona Republic is going to join me. He's been following this. They have a team in Phoenix. I was caught completely off guard. We'll explain it coming up at 4:15, or I guess 4:20 this afternoon, right after sports. Andy Puzder back with us this afternoon. He's the former CEO of CKE Restaurants for more than 16 years. Went to Washington University. CKE, of course, Hardee's and Carl's Jr. He was a Commerce Secretary nominee, didn't quite make the cut, and he wrote a book called The Trump Boom and the Left's Plot to Stop It, but he also wrote a piece over the weekend about this booming economy, and I addressed this earlier this afternoon with the complaints from the Democratic presidential hopefuls who seem to think that we're in a recession. I don't know. It's a little confusing. Andy Puzder, how are you?
Great, Mark. How are you doing?
My producer tells me you were in the dentist chair earlier today. Are you okay now?
I was, yeah. All the Novocaine is worn off, and I'm ready to go.
That would have been a fun interview, you know, full of Novocaine. We should try that sometime. All right, look, you have. Let me set this up with this soundbite here, because I don't want to offend you, but I've been calling Elizabeth Warren. I've sided with Hiawatha, not Pocahontas. But here's what she said when she kicked off her presidential race over the weekend. And this goes to the issue of the economy.
I am tired of hearing that we can't afford to make real investments in childcare, college, and Medicare for all. I'm tired of hearing that we can't afford to make investments in things that create economic opportunities for families. I'm tired of hearing what we can't afford because it's just not true.
Andy, I thought there were a lot more economic opportunities for families in an economy as red hot as this, right?
Well, you got to wonder what on earth this woman, it's hard to understand what she's talking about. Look, there are more people working, 157 million people, more people working than ever in the history of the United States. We have 6.9 million job openings and only 6.4 million people unemployed. So we've got more job openings than people unemployed. The first time that happened since the government's been reporting the data was March of last year. It's happened every month since. Because employers are competing for employees, unlike the Obama era where employees were competing for jobs, we've got employers out there competing for employees, which has driven wages up. We've had 3.2% year-over-year wage growth last year, the highest wage growth in over a decade. So we've got more people working, they're earning more money, and with the tax cuts, they're taking home more of what they earn. So what are they doing? They're spending. Spending drives two-thirds of our economic growth, and it encourages businesses. Business optimism hit record highs, according to Gallup and the National Federation of Independent Businesses last year. So businesses are growing, creating even more jobs and even more economic growth. So where she comes up with this, and you listen to Stacey Abrams in her rebuttal to the State of the Union address, and you'd think the world was collapsing. In fact, it's not. Gallup came out with a poll just the other day, which is very positive for American workers and for American businesses. It found that for, I think, the first time in history or the first time recently, we've got confidence. People's confidence in their finances is at like 69%. I think the record was set decades ago, and it was at 71%. I mean, it's near a record high, the all-time high. Here it is. The all-time high was set in March of 1998 at 71%. So people are feeling great about the economy, and you've got people like Elizabeth Warren and Stacey Abrams out there trying to convince them that it's terrible.
Well,
it's not.
Right, and if you go back, you know this, if you go back to the Obama administration when those quarters, the GDP quarters, some of which were hovering either around zero or one or a couple in negative growth, you never heard talk like this. You only heard talk about this 10-year recovery that really wasn't happening. And now that it's really kicked into gear, apparently there's complaints. And you know, a lot of the complaints, and now moving forward with Nancy Pelosi running the House again, they target the Trump tax cuts. They say these did no good whatsoever to put money into the pockets of working Americans. It only helped the rich. So the response from a guy like you is what?
Where do you think these jobs came from? Look, when you make it profitable for businesses to grow, when businesses say, you know, if we invest money, if we create jobs, we're going to increase our profits. When you do that, businesses grow and they create jobs. That's where the jobs and opportunities come from. These comments about the tax cuts hurting ordinary people or not helping the economy are simply idiotic. They're not supported by the data. They're not supported by reason. They're not supported by any rational economic theory. It's absurd. It's just absurd.
And the flip side, I guess, is what's the solution to the situation we're in right now with a booming economy? To raise taxes on people, apparently?
Yeah.
I don't know.
The things that Obama did that led to no growth. You know, the last six quarters of the Obama administration. So the six quarters closest in time to the Trump administration, with GDP growth averaged 1.5%. It was so bad that in May of 2017, Larry Summers, Obama-era economist, Clinton-era economist, president of Harvard University, came out and said, we can't get this 3% GDP growth that Trump's talking about. It's like believing in tooth fairies to believe the Trump administration. Actually used the word tooth fairies right before we had six quarters where average GDP growth was 3%. And now 2018 looks like it's going to be the first year with 3% or better GDP growth since 2005. These Trump economic policies are driving an almost unprecedented economic boom. It's a blue-collar economic boom. It's now harder to find blue-collar workers than it is to find white-collar workers, also something that hasn't been true for decades. And Democrats, progressives, socialists just can't live with it. This is no wonder it's got them so scared. It disproves everything they've said over the past 100 years. And coming right against the Obama big government administration and makes them look like idiots, because basically on economic policy, they are idiots.
Andy Puzner, my guest this afternoon, is this sustainable? I mean, conventional wisdom, Andy, would be what comes up must come down with the economy. We know that it's cyclical. There are some, I guess, a few warning signs out there. Are you worried about that at all?
Not this year, not next year. Look, there actually is a financial projection model that the St. Louis Fed, so right down the street from you,
right,
puts out, and they update it every month. And if there's less than a 20% probability of a recession on this chart, then there really won't be one. If there's over 80% chance, there will be one. They came out with it in January. It was less than a percent. It was under 1%. I mean, people are spending money. That drives two-thirds of growth. Businesses are investing. There's the other third. This is going to be a very positive year.
What do you make of what's going on in Wall Street, sort of ups and downs there?
Look, Wall Street goes up and down for a lot of reasons. Mostly it's emotional. If people think there's going to be no trade deal, then they're not going to buy companies like Caterpillar or General Motors that have big investments overseas and a lot of income from overseas. But in fact, that doesn't really impact ordinary Americans like you think it would. For example, if General Motors isn't selling as many cars that they manufacture in China to the Chinese, their profits will go down. It doesn't mean any fewer Americans are working. It doesn't mean American wages go down. I mean, trade can impact us, but it will not impact us significantly. In fact, Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank, came out in October and said, even if we had implemented all of the tariffs that the Trump administration is talking about, the overall impact on the economy viewed as a whole would be very small. So this is really not a problem.
We seemingly are going to get more focus moving forward with the presidential race on what Elizabeth Warren is referring to as a wealth tax. And even Howard Schultz, who I guess is running as an independent, said, you know, guys like me should be paying our fair share. I always hear fair share in association with that. And it's a very populist theme to take, isn't it?
It is, although they never say what a fair share should be. You know, when they say that, if you ever get on your radio show, say, okay, a fair share. What is a fair share?
Right, I know.
Yeah, what is a fair share? So they make them say a percentage, because anytime the public is asked, what's a fair share? What should people pay? It always comes in around 20-30% of income. And I guarantee you, wealthy people are already paying significantly more than that, particularly in California, where if you're wealthy, you're paying about 50% just in state and federal tax. Same thing in New York. So people are paying their fair share. We have a very progressive tax system. And, why do we want to punish people that succeed?
I don't know.
I don't understand it. Why? If they're successful, we should be shaking their hand and thanking them and saying, God, I want to be like you. We shouldn't be out there saying you need to be punished.
I've always been baffled by that. I really have. And then you go, look, I touched on this earlier this afternoon. You talk about the Green New Deal and what they're trying to achieve with that, which is just lunacy. And you have a lot of people in the mainstream media who are complicit with this, not calling out the nonsense. I heard, and this was a soundbite I played earlier this afternoon from Katie Turr from Meet the Press talking about millions of people who are going to die and the economic effects. What about the economic effects of not having, either power, the economic effects of clamping down on carbon energy so much where people can't afford it?
Yeah, how about when we had this recent Arctic cold snap? How about if we didn't have oil or natural gas to heat our homes and our factories and our businesses? People would have frozen to death. I think the one thing we've learned over the past decade is that the most efficient and effective fuel in the history of humankind has been fossil fuels. Natural gas burns very cleanly. In fact, we've reduced our pollutants, carbon in the atmosphere, more than virtually any other country on the planet through the use of natural gas. If you want to use natural gas and nuclear energy, we can solve this problem. But these fantasies that, this is what happens when you elect somebody from Congress right out of college. This is the kind of thing you're going to get.
I think we're going to get a lot more of it, too. Andy Puzzer, always great to have you back on here in your old stomping ground of St. Louis. We'll talk soon.
All right, Mark. Thanks.
Andy Puzzer with us this afternoon, 3:30. Chris Kerber on deck. Talk about the Blues and the hot streak there. That's coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Also an audio cut of the day. And sometimes I keep these secret, mainly because I'm not exactly sure what the cut of the day is going to be till about 3:50. We have so many options. But this afternoon, Bob Costas has revealed as part of a new story at ESPN's Outside the Lines about how he eventually parted ways with NBC Sports and why that happened. And some of that will be, I think, rather obvious to people paying attention. Through the magic of radio, ladies and gentlemen, that guy you just heard on there, Chris Kerber, is on the phone with me right now. It's miraculous. Can you confirm that you're on the phone, Kerbs?
It's amazing how that happens.
Wow. How are you?
I'm doing great. Mark, how are you?
Well, I saw you here earlier in the sports office. You were busy working, so I didn't come in and bother you. But obviously, pretty exciting times. And look, you're going to call the games whether the team is winning or losing. But I can imagine this is a whole hell of a lot more fun.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a lot more fun when you start to realize you're going into games saying, all right, how's this one going to turn out? Not, I hope we have a chance. So there's a big difference. And earlier today, we were working on Chili's Week in Hockey. So Martin Brodeur is going to join us on that show tonight from 8 to 10. And Darren Pang, and a pretty good packed show there for people as well later on if they want a hockey fix tonight.
Well, I don't, I've told you this before. I'm not a hockey expert. I am a fan. I watched the game yesterday, which was exciting. But I think you've said it. Anyone who knows hockey, look, if you're stars, you have to have your stars performing like stars. And the Blue Stars are starting to do that right now.
Yeah. It really comes down to that market. And I know it's a cliche, but the reality of it is the best players have to be the best players, no matter what the sport is. You can look at the baseball side of things. If your best players aren't your best players, you're not going to win. If your top pitchers aren't performing, if your top outfielders aren't performing, you're not going to win. Well, that's the same in hockey. In football, it's your quarterback. It's just you got to have guys going, and that they do. They've got them going. They've got the guys rolling now, which is good. And Vladimir Tarasenko, who had 11 goals up until this point, now has 11 more in his last 16 games. So it just kind of shows you the importance there. And if he isn't Vladimir Tarasenko and lighting it up the way he did, then the next thing you're losing that game by 2 goals. So you need those star players to be, and thank goodness for Blues fans, Vladimir Tarasenko has done just that.
How many seconds were we into overtime before that goal yesterday?
16 seconds.
Yeah, I had to rewind the DVR because I looked away from the television, and all of a sudden I realized, wait a second, he just scored and won the game, and rewound it from there. So that was pretty exciting. Not only because of that finish, but, that was going back and forth from the very beginning. I think the Blues jumped on a lead, but Nashville kept scoring.
Yeah, no score in the first period. Then the Blues got 2. Nashville got 1, and the Blues made it 3-1. Nashville opened up and just really brought the heat in the third period, made it 3-3. Tarasenko got a goal, scorer's goal, you know, where it deflects off a stick and in. That's 4-3. They tie it 4-4. I mean, it was a back-and-forth game. And, you know, both teams played a very hard physical game the night before in a one-goal game. And I really, fans got to understand this. This isn't making an excuse, but I'm telling you, when you're playing four games in a week, or they're in a stretch of 13 games in 22 days, Mark, the idea that you're going to see the best out of all those players throughout that whole stretch, it's insane. It's almost impossible with the physical nature of the sport. So I thought, in the end, I'm not surprised it was a seesaw game back and forth on Sunday, and I'm not surprised it went to overtime either.
All right, so one of the reasons, I think, for the success is we've got a hot rookie goaltender in Jordan Binnington, but then Jake Allen comes out of, I don't want to say retirement, but just off of a little bit of a respite here and does pretty well.
That wasn't nice.
Well, you know, wrong word. It was a slip of the tongue.
Funny, but not nice. You know what? Look, you're going to need both goaltenders here, okay? And you're going to look at that wraparound goal from Roman Josi and go, I would like to have seen Jake made that save. All right, he looked a little slow getting over there. You're going to look at a couple times where he was swimming in that crease a little bit more, you know, than you'd like to see. But he always tends to be more of that kind of movement active goaltender. That said, you talk to the players in that locker room, and this isn't just, you know, media speak. They go, Jake helped us lock down that third period when we needed it because they kept pushing. Otherwise, that game gets out of hand. You're going to need it, and you're going to need him to be good because you've got two more sets of back-to-backs this month. You know, so when the Blues go Colorado, Minnesota, you know, or when they play Boston at home and then go up to Minnesota, and these aren't games that just don't mean anything. I mean, you're talking a back-to-back game with Colorado and Minnesota, two teams you're right there with in the standings. I mean, these are critically important games from a standing standpoint. They're going to be like playoff games because all three teams are playing for their playoff lives. Nobody has a cushion. You're going to need Jake to be good, and you're going to need to be need Binnington to be good. And how about that? Jordan Binnington named the number one star of the week. So in a short time since he came up here, he's been playing regularly for the Blues. He's been a number two star and a number one star in the NHL for the course of a week.
All right, so explain where the playoff position is right now.
So right now the Blues sit in the number one wild card position. They're tied in points with Minnesota, who has the number two wild card position, but the Blues have played two fewer games. Just ahead of the Blues is the Dallas Stars. The Stars sit 2 points ahead of the Blues in the standings. The Blues have a game in hand on them, and plus we've got an upcoming game in 2 weeks with the with the Dallas Stars. The reason that third place in the division is important is that's a guaranteed playoff spot. The wild cards, you're competing with all the other teams in your conference. It's the next two best records after the third place team. So the Blues actually still have a legitimate shot to finishing third in the Central Division, you know, and really make this thing fun. So the standings are looking really good for the Blues. What's most important is they're back to controlling their own destiny here, and so if they make it, it's on them. They got the help they needed to get back into the race. Now you either make it or you don't based on your own play, and it's up to them to get it done.
So I'm looking at the standings here, and they're way, way down, I guess, in the Central right now. But you know who else is hot right now? The Blackhawks have won 7 in a row, I notice.
Yeah, the Blackhawks have won 7 in a row. Now, they still have played 2 more games than the Blues have, so they've got it's amazing. They've won 7 in a row, and look at the hill that they still have to climb. Look, and let me tell you something that's okay. This is kind of crazy talk, but it's not absolutely impossible here. The Blues still have three games in hand on the Nashville Predators, or 4, plus another game head to head. I mean, if a little bit of luck goes your way, you could end up maybe even clawing your way into a shot of maybe knocking Nashville down a peg or two. So, I mean, the standings watch is going to be a whole heck of a lot of fun.
That's fun. It's nice to have this. You know, I think that Blues fans were so hungry and so disappointed that there's a lot to rally for right now. So, Curbs, I appreciate coming on here, and hopefully, how many games left?
Let's see. We got 28 games.
That's still a fair amount of games. Obviously, things can...
Oh, that's a third of your season.
Yeah, things can still trend down, but let's hang on to this for a little while. We'll talk soon. Chris Kerber with us this afternoon. Thanks, Chris.
You got it, Mark. Have a good day.
I have an audio cut of the day from Bob Costas coming up about why he thinks he was basically told to leave NBC. That's coming up here in just a couple of minutes. But let me spend a little bit of time on a column that I wrote over the weekend. I do these columns for KMOX.com, and then I guess we post them on our Facebook page. I tend to not like, and I mentioned this earlier, I do have time to sift through the Twitter feed, and I see people trolling me, and every once in a while I'll respond. But there's a lot of times, depending on the tweet, there's literally hundreds of responses. So I think some people don't understand that. I mean, you've got a million, I don't have a million followers, but think about the people who have a million followers or a couple hundred thousand followers. They get hit all the time. Having said that, Facebook has sort of been one of those things that I've lost interest in outside of just posting some pictures of my family and my daughter. But I get these alerts, and I think a lot of people do, if someone tags you on Facebook. So I noticed something on Saturday morning, and I thought, I'm going to click on that because I thought it was on my page. I don't really like it when people post something on my page without my permission, and I typically delete it. But it was the column that I wrote, and people were responding to that. And the headline was, media coverage of Covington Catholic scandal is disgusting. And the subtitle was, I used to defend my friends in the media and I thought Trump went too far. I won't do that any longer. And that's certainly a commitment that I'm making in the aftermath of not only the situation with Brett Kavanaugh in the fall, but the Covington Catholic story. And then even just overall the coverage of the economy that we were talking about with Andy Puzder. But the one point that I was making is, and I've made this several times on the air in the last couple of weeks, is Nathan Phillips has been held up as this somehow this hero, and he is a disgusting human being who, you know, basically saw an opportunity that he'd have a willing and able biased media to further his lies and agenda, and that's what he did. Lied about virtually everything. You'd never know, and I'm guessing good portion of the people who were chiming in on my column didn't watch the video. They did not hear the audio of the black Hebrew Israelites hurling slurs at his group. This whole thing started with his group, the Native Americans that were there protesting, beating on the drums, being called savages, being told that Indian means savage, and other outrageous things. Then they, of course, tossed some of those same, you know, vile, hate-filled remarks on the Covington Catholic kids. But you'd never know that if you listen to Nathan Phillips and the way that he's been propped up by the media. So I just have to point this out because it's not surprising to me the level of ignorance that goes on with people out there. But some guy chimes in and he says, you know, I should probably just pull this up, but it'd be too hard to do right now. You know, Reardon, you absolutely reveal your bias and bigotry and hatred and racism by referring to that group as the black Hebrew Israelites. So in a day and age where my boss will tell you that I've become more disciplined because I used to fire things back when people would email me and I'd be a smart ass. And it took me many years to not do that, mainly because I don't want to give people the satisfaction of a response. And then I just get myself in trouble because I've had some big babies out there who have not responded well to that. And then they go running to my boss and they say, see what that mean Mark Reardon wrote about me. So it's not even worth it anymore. But in this particular case, the guy was so stupid, I had to respond. And I said, yeah, you know what, dude, I apologize for that because they're literally called the black Hebrew Israelites. He's taking issue with me calling them black Hebrew Israelites when that's what they are called, literally. And when I point this out, he sort of acknowledges that I was right in a roundabout way and then says, well, it doesn't matter. You're still racist. And the guy probably never even listens. So stunning level of ignorance out there. And this is why I make the comparison to Ferguson, because the same people who have their heads in the sand and don't want to acknowledge what really happened that day in Washington with the Covenant Catholic kids are the same people who will never read the grand jury testimony or the Justice Department report that was, by the way, performed by Eric Holder, African-American Attorney General of the African American president, who said, no, there's no crimes here in Ferguson. Isn't Wesley Bell still sort of considering whether to, you know, reopen that investigation? That'd be awesome, wouldn't it? It's 4:47. I'm sorry, 3:47. Getting an hour ahead of myself because it's a Monday. Audio cut of the day, Bob Costas' explanation for why he's no longer at NBC coming up.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Cut of the Day is sponsored this afternoon by my friends at the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. There's a new story at ESPN's Outside the Lines where Bob Costas has revealed the backstory of how he lost the hosting gig for Super Bowl 52 last year, and then it was announced last month that he is parting ways with NBC after many decades. Here's Bob telling his story.
It's possible to say football is an exciting sport, but there are these undeniable problems. The issue that is most substantial, the existential issue, is the nature of football itself.
And so it was that 1 year ago, just weeks before he was to host his seventh and final Super Bowl, Bob Costas was removed from the telecast. It all began to fall apart on November 7th, 2017, at a symposium in Maryland.
The reality is that this game destroys people's brains.
Costas' comments went viral, and NBC, whose current contract with the NFL is worth roughly $9 billion, quickly distanced itself from its star. Bob's opinions are his own, and they do not represent those of the NBC Sports Group.
So I guess that NBC is not sure whether there's a connection between football and brain trauma. And I imagine the next press release is, it's still open to question whether or not the earth is round or flat. Okay, I'm good.
You had a viral moment this week.
Sensing a brewing conflict with NBC, Costas says he went on CNN to try to tamp things down.
I've been saying these things for the better part of a decade, and often on NBC. I stand by anything I say publicly. But
soon after, Costas says he was contacted by NBC executive producer Sam Flood and told he was being removed from the Super Bowl.
I think the words were, you've crossed the line. And my thought was, what line have I crossed?
Costas says he also spoke with NBC Sports Chairman Mark Lazarus.
And I remember reminding them of things going back to the 90s, of what I had done, what credibility I would have to comment about these things. And their reaction to that was, you're right. You're right, but this puts us in a position that's untenable for us. So you can't do the Super Bowl.
You know, it's one of those situations where, truthfully, I can see both sides. It's a business decision on the part of NBC. Bob was speaking his mind. I don't think there's a lot of room for debate in his opinion on what CTE is doing. So maybe it's unreasonable to expect that the network that he works for that's promoting the National Football League and making a lot of money on it wouldn't want someone slamming the sport. There apparently was not room for both to exist in the same stratosphere. This does, however, paint a clear picture of why he left NBC. I think a lot of people knew that that had something to do with it. But again, that's audio from a new ESPN Outside the Lines. Bob Costas this afternoon for your audio cut of the day on KMOX. Total Information PM coming up next.
Vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!